Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Total Saints podcast. I'm Martin Stark. We stream each episode of TSP Live on our Facebook page and our YouTube channel. So if you're watching live on either of those platforms, you can get involved in the conversation using the comments section. Coming up this week on the podcast, we're going to discuss the disappointing defeat away to Brentford. And there are two games to go. We're going to preview the visit of Liverpool next Tuesday. Let me introduce you to our TSP guests this week. Steve Grant is the owner of Saints Web. How's your week been, Steve? How's your footballing week been?
Yeah, well, went to Brentford yesterday. New ground for me, and well, for pretty much everyone, I imagine. And yeah, kind of as ever, a good day out with some mates I've not seen for a while was ruined by the 90 minutes of football. So yeah, that was annoying, but the rest of the day was decent. Good drink up in some nice pubs, and went to a gig in the evening over in Camden. So that was all right.
Wow, made the most of it then.
Yes.
Absolutely. Glenn Delacour is the writer of the weekly Saints blog League One Minus 10. Glenn, are you looking forward to the season being over as much as the rest of us?
Yeah, it would be nice to get it finished, but it's going to be another summer of hitting F5 every few seconds, isn't it, to see what's happening, because there's going to be lots going on. I don't think we're exactly going to get a rest. You know, I don't think there's going to be a quiet month sort of thing before it all kicks off again. I think it's going to be fairly busy and fairly frantic. So I'm sure there'll be things to annoy us all throughout the summer, and hopefully some things to get excited about as well. But yeah,
well, we need those.
Yeah, it's never a simple thing, is it?
Also joining us tonight, Dan Sheldon is the dedicated Southampton reporter for The Athletic. Was that your first visit to Brentford yesterday? A relatively short trip up the M3 must be good.
Yeah, it was nice. Really, really, really nice people, really nice staff, quite a cool stadium. Just, yeah, as Steve said, terrible football.
Same about the football, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get onto that in a minute. The biggest hello and thank you, of course, is reserved to our wonderful patrons, wherever you might be listening or watching this week. Welcome to episode 197 of the Total Saints podcast.
This is the Total Saints podcast with Martin Stark, Steve Grant, Glenn Delacour, and The Athletic's Dan Sheldon.
And before we start, just a quick reminder about this live event which we've got coming up to mark our 200th episode. We're going to be hosting a live podcast in Southampton. The date for the calendar is Friday the 27th of May, so just a couple of weeks' time. It's going to be from 7 o'clock at the Five Rivers Sports Bar in Beavers Valley, and the evening is going to be supporting the Saints Foundation. 100% of the ticket proceeds are all going directly to that charity. So if you're interested in coming along, you can find the link to the event in the description for the podcast, and just check out all the socials as well over the next week or so. Now, after another defeat this time, Brentford, it means it's one win in 10 Premier League games for Southampton, going down 3-0 at the Brentford Community Stadium on Saturday. Dan, I'm going to start with you first, because I think you pointed out yesterday about the fans turning on the manager for the first time and highlighting that as a real turning point for the manager and the season.
Well, no, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily probably say it was a turning point for the season. I mean, the season's turned around in March and has been terrible since then. But I just thought it was significant because in all the games I've been at cover, and I mean, I've been covering the club since Ralph took charge, I've not, you know, you hear fans boo, but you know, I've not heard "you don't know what you're doing and you're getting sacked in the morning." So for me, that felt like quite a significant moment. It should be said it wasn't the entire away end, but it was loud enough for everyone to hear it crystal clear over the other side of the stadium. Yeah, at first I was thinking, is that coming from the Southampton crowd? I mean, especially the "you don't know what you're doing" one, I thought, well, that's definitely Southampton. And then the "you're getting sacked in the morning," I didn't know whether that was coming from the Brentford fans over that side, or I knew someone in the way end, Simon Peach, friend of the show, and I just messaged him to say, "Was that come from?" And he was like, "No, yeah, but it just wasn't everyone." I don't know, it felt a bit surreal, to be honest. Just kind of like, wow, it's at that point. And I can understand their frustration. I think it was, you know, they're 3-0 down and you bring on Romelu. Hmm. And you just think like, what, you're going to put him up front? Or, oh no, here going to defensive midfield. Like, it was just very odd. There are a lot of frustrating. I mean, and for me, that's been the culmination of kind of several months. That's not just a reaction to Stuart Armstrong being taken off for Romelu. I mean, that's... I won't speak for the fans, but my guess is that's, you know, since March it's been atrocious. The players don't seem to be putting a shift in. The manager seems to be running out of ideas, and nothing appears to be working. And it's the frustration of yet another season that's gone to waste. So, you know, we were sat here 2.5-3 months ago talking about almost them being a shoo-in for the top 10 and maybe they can sneak into Europe. Now they're looking over their shoulder. And I sat watching the Leeds game earlier thinking, how has it got to this point that I want Arsenal to win this match? Yeah. It's, you know,
Relying on others.
So I think the outpouring of frustration was probably all linked to that. It was uncomfortable. It's never nice hearing those chants. And I know Ralph afterwards said he didn't hear them. You have to kind of take him at face value on that. But I was sat further away from it than he was. And I managed to hear what was being said. And it wasn't particularly loud at that time. So yeah, very surreal would probably be how I'd describe it. Unexpected, because as I said, through the 9-0s, through the other terrible performances, at no point had they done the "you're getting sacked." So yeah, quite surprising, but the fans are entitled to their opinion.
And Steve, you were there yesterday. What was your take on the whole thing?
Steve led the chants, from what I'm told.
Were you singing?
No, I was kind of just
head in hands. Palming,
face palming mostly. I mean, it's got to that situation where you're now seeing the frustration boil over in the stand, not only in the songs, but also there were a couple of incidents where people were having to pop at each other. There was definitely a bit of wrestling going on in one of the aisles, where someone had basically said something across the aisle to someone else. Someone had fired back, and then all of a sudden people were having to get in the way to separate them, and all, and it was all very sort of scrappy do hold me back type
we haven't
thing.
Seen that for years.
It was pathetic, but That's the situation we're in now, whereby and it's also, I mean, the way that things go these days, you basically have to entrench yourself in one position or another. Seemingly, there's no room for nuance or kind of mitigating circumstances for anything. It's you've got to be taking one position, pick your side, any side, and you've got to stick with it no matter what you see in front of you. So that's where we are now. And I mean, I guess the one benefit is that we're so close to the end of the season where all this has kicked off, that actually the summer, and if the club decides, right, no, we're sticking by him, and they get themselves vaguely sorted in the transfer window and move fairly early and quickly, then actually that might quell the issues and nip everything in the bud fairly sharpish. But if they let things drag out and we actually don't have the summer that I think we all probably agree is needed in terms of recruitment, then the start of next season, suddenly you're already looking at an ugly situation. And then if you're going to change a manager, the best time to do it is the summer. So I think they need to, ultimately, they need to know what they want to do and make it known fairly quickly, I think.
What was your take on the game yesterday, Glenn? Another painful watch, and seems like we've only got ourselves to blame.
It was abysmal. I mean, we did all right for the first 10 minutes, and then they scored with their first attack, and then they scored with their second attack. And from that moment on, you're up against it. I didn't actually think Brentford were that great. And if we'd have scored at any point between the second and the third goal, I think it may well have panned out like the Brighton game did a few weeks ago, where we were 2-0 down. And because I didn't think they were great, but it was just one of those where we didn't look like we were ever really going to score. I didn't think we had much idea going forward. Created a couple of chances, but Adam Armstrong was unlucky with that one just before half time. That was a really good finish. It would have been nice for him if that had gone in. But if that had counted. But yeah, once the third goal went in, that was the point that the all the frustrations came to the surface. And you know, the third goal was rubbish. It had been coming, because every time Brentford got a set piece or got the ball near our penalty area, I mean, I don't know what our centre backs were doing all game. They were just atrocious. I mean, Ivan Toney was playing in the Championship last year. Bednarek has played international football. He's played against some top quality strikers when he plays for Poland. And Ivan Toney made him look like an idiot, more so than most of the other forwards have made him look like an idiot this year. It's just nowhere near him. And it's Salisu is still in this sort of trench that he's got himself into over the last sort of 10 games. And I think that's a major part of why we've struggled. The defence is just shocking. And it seems to stem mainly from those two in the middle. You've got to remember, Fraser's played reasonably well for this period of 10 games. But I think it all came sort of crashing down yesterday. We have the chance. I saw the interview with Stuart Armstrong afterwards where he said, you know, we have the chances and we don't score. If you look at this 10 league games that we've had since once the wheels started to come off, none of our strikers have scored. No. Not one goal from the strikers. We've had the odd one from Armstrong, one from Elianusi. Other than that, it's Ward-Prowse all the way. Hmm. You know, so we are, to quote Alan Hansen, can't score, can't defend. Not a good not a good combination. And as usual, you know, it's the manager who cops the flak. And I know we're probably going to go into this later, you know, in more detail later on. But some of those players have just been a disgrace. I feel for the last few weeks, and I think it all came crashing down yesterday, really. And it was just awful. It's just one of those games where you're just not invested in it. You know, when you go 2-0 down, I'm watching it thinking, well, you know, we might. You know, there was a brief moment when Armstrong had the goal disallowed, and when there was the penalty shout when the goalie came out like a loony and sort of had that incident with Brozier that I thought, well, that's a little bit interesting, but the game was just rubbish, really. Didn't enjoy it at all. There was nothing to remember it by afterwards, really. I was trying to write notes for it today, and I was just thinking, there's really not much to say.
Blank sheet of paper. And Steve, two quickfire goals that pretty much killed the game, but once again, littered with errors, weren't they, and mistakes in there.
Just pathetic. Just down the middle of us again. I mean, actually, that second goal kind of actually reminds me a little bit of that Sofiane Boufal wonder goal against West Brom, where do you remember when the two centre backs collided on the way through? And that was kind of similar with a similar sort of passed finish into the corner to finish it. And it was just Keystone Kop stuff. I mean, as Glenn said, I mean, Bednarek was absolutely pathetic again, as he has been for months. Salisu looked like he couldn't be arsed, and by the sound of it, his brother was kicking off with various unhappy fans in the away end. I'd never understand why family members and hangers-on of players go and stand in the away section, because as soon as they have a bad game, you are asking for trouble. And apparently that didn't go well, and it's just been pathetic. From a defensive perspective, and it's weird because you actually look at the performances of our fullbacks, and they've largely been fine. Hmm. I thought Walker Peters was pretty good yesterday. Perrault, certainly in the first half, got into some great positions going forward. It was only Redmond who ever actually managed to find him in with the right pass at the right time. Diallo looks as if he's got no confidence whatsoever to play the sort of eye of the needle through ball that was needed each time, so he kept turning back. But it's just in the middle. Defensively, Lianco and Jack Stevens must be an absolute train wreck in training if they're not able to get in the team ahead of these two at the moment. Because, I mean, you could take, like, the worst. I mean, you could, I mean, let's say Norwich's two centre-backs, Grant Hanley and, I can't even remember who else plays alongside him. Put either of those two into our defence, and automatically at the moment you improve it. Hmm. Because those two are playing that badly and look like they've got no tosses to give in that situation. At the moment, it seems. So if those rumours of Bednarek getting sold for decent money to Italy are true, fine. I mean, I'll drive him there and buy him a pizza myself. It's just, he's just been abysmal. And the whole, as you say, the whole Man City thing of not wanting to play in what was clearly the biggest game of the season because he had a personally slightly bigger one 10 days later. Nah, not for me. He's done for me. And it's just so disappointing that every season we get into this situation. I mean, let's face it, most seasons at the moment we get to a point where all of a sudden we're not playing for anything because we're out of the cups and we're relatively safe in the league. So it's okay. Everyone wants to get finish the season strongly. You want to we all want to finish as high as possible. Do the players feel the same? I mean, on evidence from what my eyes have told me over my 38 years is that no, players don't really care about league position. There's nothing in it for them if there's nothing tangible at the end of it. So years where we're fighting relegation, sure, we fight to the final whistle. That year where we were going for Europa League group stage under Koeman, we were going to the end and we won our last four games, but. Season. I mean, there's so many seasons where we've been sort of comfortably in mid-table. I mean, anywhere from eighth downwards. And as soon as we get to the point where, like high 30s, maybe 40 odd points, all of a sudden it's just, oh, we'll just toss this off now. We've got no interest in playing the rest of these games. Claude Puel lost his job as a direct result. And I'm sure there have been other managers in the past who have probably fallen by the wayside as well, because the players have just decided, six or seven games to go, can't be arsed now.
Well, there was four changes yesterday, Dan, with a few players coming in. Did anybody shower themselves in some glory? You think maybe if that Armstrong goal hadn't been disallowed, that might have shifted the momentum a bit and maybe done wonders for his confidence. But did anybody coming in for you stand out or stake a claim to be a key player next season?
No. No, to put it bluntly, they lost 3-0 and they were terrible. I thought it was a good finish. I thought that's a really good finish into the bottom corner for someone that hasn't played and found himself behind Shane Long in the pecking order. Took his chance really well, just a shame it was offside. Thought Brozier looked a little bit more active at times than he's done in recent weeks. Looked a bit more up for it. So you could maybe take those as positives, but then you realise who the opponents are. So in the next game, so you just think, well, those positives are going to be short-lived. As Steve said, thought Kyle Walker-Peters, Perot, both kind of good enough. Diallo didn't really work for me, I don't think, in the middle. And the game just came down to when Prowsey had those free kicks, you thought, oh, this might be Saints' this is how they get out of this mess. But yeah, it was terrible all around. So no, the four changes didn't make any difference. They went from being terrible against Crystal Palace to being terrible against Brentford. So
And Glenn, we spoke a bit about this last week. Maybe two or three players aside, nobody's place is safe next season, is it? You get rid of the lot.
You wouldn't be bothered about a number of them leaving. You know, I was head in hands a little bit when I saw the team. It's just some of it doesn't make sense. If you just take the two strikers, you've got Brozier, who was slagged off by the manager last week for not doing anything. Somehow he goes straight into the team off the back of that. And Adam Armstrong, who hasn't even been able to get off the bench for the last 9-10 weeks, suddenly is a first-team starter. I didn't understand that. Che Adams had a poor game last week, but he was good the week before. So he's the only striker who has been in even remotely reasonable form recently, and he gets left on the bench. And doesn't come on when we need a goal. So it does seem like some players are judged by harsher standards than others. I mean, we've mentioned Bednarek, who just seems to, it's like, how many bad games can you have in a row before you get left out? It's remarkable how
still counting.
Yeah, still counting. my old mate Nathan Redmond. I mean, I get what Steve's saying when he gets the ball in space, he is one that can actually pick a pass out and create.
He actually looks up. He gets his head up, which so many of ours don't at the moment.
But the trouble is, the rest of the time, if he gets given the ball anywhere near an opponent, forget it. He's not interested in any sort of physical challenge whatsoever. Maybe he's got an eye on next season, and maybe being somewhere else. I don't know. But he was like running away from the ball a lot of the time. Didn't look interested. I thought Stuart Armstrong tried, but his final ball was bad yesterday. Quite often he made a good run forward, but then the final ball was usually a skiddy cross that just got wellied out. The criticism of Ralph, and then I know we're going to get onto that, is kind of, you know, it's warranted at this point, but we've got some bad players who are never going to be more than, you know, bottom six level players. And, you know, and until we sort that out, then we're always going to struggle. They can put in the odd good performance, and when they all do it together, we look like a half decent side. But there's too many that just, they don't seem to be able to put in a sort of 7 out of 10 performance. It's either an 8 out of 10 or it's a 3 out of 10. And there's far too many inconsistent players who just fall off a cliff for a few weeks. And you just can't have that and expect to be remotely successful in Premier League level.
Is it the lack of investment, Steve, that's catching up with us, do you think? There's lots of ways to dress it up, and you can talk about like the net spend or what we spent in January, what we spent in the summer. Is the bottom line, we haven't invested enough and we are where we are because that's where we deserve to be?
Possibly. I mean, certainly there's no kind of debating the numbers from a raw perspective, but I think there's always scope to do more with the money that you've got. And actually, actually think we've not done, I mean, other than the obvious sort of 10, 15 million pound buys that have very clearly failed, the likes of Hoot, Lamina, Carrizo and players like that, the vast majority have at least contributed something. But the problem is that those sort of players are, as Glenn says, they're the ones that are going to give you, they'll give you an eye-catching performance every now and then, but more often than not, they'll be average at best. And that's kind of the problem where you've got a league system that pretty much actively encourages stockpiling from the bigger sides, because they can just send them out on loan to whoever they feel like at any given moment. And a sort of wage structure where, I mean, obviously we've been kind of living in sort of slightly tightened times over the past 5 years or so, because we had an owner who, for whatever reason, either wasn't able to invest his own money or didn't want to, which, I mean, either of those isn't a cause for grumbling per se, I don't think, because I think clubs should be run sustainably. But when everyone else is finding a way, we kind of haven't. And yeah, I guess to an extent that's coming back to bite a little bit. I don't think we were ever going to be able to maintain the sort of hit rate that we had in the Koeman era, in terms of the players that we acquired, more or less all working out brilliantly. But there were probably a 2 or 3 year period where we went the complete opposite direction. They were all disasters. And we're still kind of, I mean, it's only really since the takeover and seemingly the financial situation as a result being sorted, we're only kind of now over that. So this summer is the first one where it's kind of a clean slate. And I mean, that's kind of why I say I think we need to kind of set our stall out early and make sure it is early with one or two signings. Because I know that the club likes to let these things drag on, particularly into July the 1st, so that it fits into the next financial year. But I think there comes a point where you've kind of just got to lay down a marker just to silence the kind of, I mean, it's pretty relentless negativity at the moment.
Hmm. And Dan, do you think there'd be, obviously, players coming and going, but do you think there'll be other changes going on behind the scenes? I know that there's the head of recruitment that's off to Leicester. The club are trying to keep hold of him. Does that make sense to you, to keep hold of someone that wants to go? Do you think they'd just be pressing the reset button over the summer and looking at all aspects?
Well, I mean, ultimately, he's an employee of Southampton Football Club. He has a notice period, like I'm sure all of us do. For me, I don't know why. Unless Southampton were concerned that Martin Glover wouldn't be fully focused on the summer transfer window because he'd have Leicester in his head, then I don't see any reason why they should let him go early. He's been planning this, you know, he's been part of all the meetings for the summer recruitment. So for me, it's fairly logical to keep him in his post until he served his notice period. I think if Southampton were worried that he'd be kind of giving away stuff to Leicester, then I don't think they'd have hired someone of that character in the first place. Everything I hear about Martin Glover is always very positive, you know, really good guy. So no, I there's nothing that concerns me there. Him eventually leaving does give Sport Republic, from what I'm told, there will be some changes to the structure. So Martin going, or when he does go to Leicester, that obviously creates a vacancy. And how do they fill that vacancy? Can they shuffle a few people around? Do you change the makeup of the board? These are all things that Sport Republic will have to consider going into the summer. It wouldn't have really made too much sense to do it in January. For me, when they took over, you kind of just leave things as they are. Mm. Southampton were on a really good run of form at that time. Everyone was happy. So get to the summer. But I think as a whole, I think, yeah, structural changes do have to kind of, I think you want to see a few bodies moving around. And I think that stems to the playing staff, the coaching staff, and that's not me advocating for any manager to get sacked. I just think, you know, put some fresh voices in there around Ralph or whatever. And that is something I think supporters will want to see Sport Republic doing. It's about, well, how can we now take this club to the next level? Because it's been stale for quite some time.
And Glenn, Ralph was quite quick to dismiss the on the beach claims this week. But if the effort and work rate isn't there, is it a lack of skill, a lack of direction, or are they just not playing for him? Could it be, you know, wider issues?
I think it's probably all of the above. I definitely think there's, I mean, in these days of, you know, statistics that seem to come out for everything, I'd be interested to see what our running stats are. But to be honest, that game against Crystal Palace, you could see with you know, you didn't need a calculator to realise that we weren't running you know, we had no one to pass to in that game, and it was just awful. So we ended up banging the ball out of the pitch. There are lots of factors that are causing this drop off. Ralph is one of them, I think. I think it's fair to say that. I think it's reached a point where I never mind when I can see the logic of things. Things don't have to be explained to my satisfaction. It's no one's job to do that. But I like to think I know a little bit. But sometimes you look at things and just think, what is going on here? Why are we doing that? You know, why are we playing this way against this particular team? Why do we have a coach who's specifically detailed for set pieces, defending and attacking? We've got the best one of the best set piece takers in the country. We never score from a corner, or hardly ever score from a corner. And every time Brentford crossed the ball into the box from a set piece on Saturday, it's an absolute train wreck. You know, is there any accountability for the coaches who are, just to carry on with that point, for ages I've been worried about how we defend corners. You know, we put the three big guys or whatever we've got along the 6 yard line, and we rely on someone like Diallo or Ward-Prowse to mark the biggest player. You look at the first goal. That cross came in, and Ivan Toney's being marked by Diallo, and he just like throws him off. It's embarrassing. He chests it down, crosses it, goal. It's pathetic. It's pathetic. So why isn't Ivan Toney being marked by someone with a bit of physical presence?
And did I read, Dan, that you said that they were picking the strikers based on their size, not with a view to scoring goals, but with a view to marking at set pieces? Was that right?
That's not come from me. That's come from Ralph in his press conference. So I'd heard the week before that one of the reasons perhaps why Adam Armstrong isn't featuring is there's a more technical thing to it, and someone mentioned defending at corners to me, and then Ralph was asked about Adam Armstrong and actually brought that up ahead of the Brentford game, where he just said that Dave Watson wouldn't be too happy if I'm picking kind of two strikers that are smaller than 6 foot. So,
well, sod Dave Watson, why on earth do we sign a 5 foot, why do we pay 15 million for a 5'7" centre forward then? You know, it's mental. So yeah, we spent all this money on you, but sorry, you're not going to play because
you're not talking about.
You haven't grown 4 inches since we signed you.
Well, it was the defending set pieces that was the interesting. It's like, I thought, well, that's not really Adam Armstrong's job. Or it shouldn't be his job. He should just be a body in the box, really. That's, I mean, as a striker, he's not really got any defensive now, has he?
It's a shame that rules out signing Lionel Messi next season, doesn't it, really? Because he's only 5'5".
If we want someone to put some work rate in, I think that's probably a struggle anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's your take, Steve, on the manager at the moment and the coaching setup? Because clearly questions are being answered, are asked about stuff like this, aren't they, at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, you're coming up to the close season where if you're going to make a change of some description, whether that be the manager, whether that be a complete clean sweep of right one out, all out, or whether it's, okay, well, we're just going to refine, we still believe that Ralph can do it, and we've not actually given him anything kind of tangible, sort of financed investment wise to date. So let's see how he gets on with some actual backing. But let's kind of rotate out the coaching staff. See if some different voices alongside provide some new ideas and a little bit of new impetus. I mean, I don't know as Glenn says, I mean, Dave Watson was goalkeeper coach, got booted from that because our goalkeepers all became terrible. So we decided to give him a job of drawing up set piece routines, which, I mean, from an attacking perspective, I mean, to be fair, from an attacking perspective about 2 years ago, largely because we had a guy that was 6'8" and could win stuff in the air. So it's a lot easier to design good set piece sort of routines when you've got players with those attributes. Not so much when you've got a centre back who seems to kind of be afraid to tackle anybody at the moment, as we have with Jan. And what Kelvin Davis does, I have no idea. Genuinely, I mean, he's on the books as a coach. What sort of coach does he does he specialize in anything? I mean, from what I've seen, he doesn't do any work with the goalkeepers.
Phil Walcott's on the book as a player.
Well, but Walcott's got a fixed term contract at least. Davis, I assume, is just an ordinary employee, so he's employed for as long as he's employed. And I just we've got coaches on that coaching staff who's like, what are you actually bringing to the table here? Because I've got absolutely no idea.
Well, they haven't ever. I mean, I think we're probably all in unison. They haven't. Well, they haven't ever replaced Danny Roll. I know that sounds so simplistic, but I can't tell you how highly the players thought of like that. Danny, I mean, look what he's done since he's left, really. I mean, it's not a coincidence that Hansi Flick would kind of plead with him to go to Germany and do the national team job when he could have stayed and have Nagelsmann pleading with him to stay at Bayern. You know, that's not a coincidence. You've got Richard Kitzbühler, who I guess was maybe a de facto replacement, but he's more of a video analyst. He's not really a coach. He's more of a video analyst from that RB model. And then another thing that is striking is you never really see them join Ralf in the dugout, in the technical area, sorry.
During the game,
I mean, you see Dave Watson up there sometimes with the iPad, obviously kind of maybe showing Ralf something about set pieces, or when the players come over, he'll be there with his iPad and so showing them something.
He's playing Temple Run.
Tall they all are.
I do think Andrew Spott, the goalkeeper, I thought he's done, you know, bearing in mind he has two goalkeepers that have had to kind of change the way they play entirely, and we can all debate the merits of whether they've actually improved or not. You know, that was probably a difficult job, and he's done that, in my opinion, quite well.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And Craig Fleming, from what I'm told, is pretty good. That's not me saying I'm not told the others aren't any good, but that is kind of as far as it goes, really. For me, it's just if they're going to keep Ralf, which I do think they should, because I do think, you know, with Sport Republic, you have got perhaps a bit more financial freedom than before, and you know, give him actual backing and then see what he does. I mean, that will, of course, put him under humongous pressure at the start of next season. You probably can't afford to start that slowly. But keep him and just change some of the voices. I'm not saying get rid of them, but just maybe add a couple in or put a new assistant. I mean, he's got like five assistants anyway. So why not have a sixth one that actually, you know, will come in with fresh ideas?
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, Martin Semmons is Ralf's biggest supporter. You know, he was on the radio 2 months ago saying, and I'm paraphrasing here possibly, the best manager Southampton could possibly have. So he obviously thinks very highly of him. He supported him when we've had those hammerings that we got. But even Martin, I imagine, would struggle with finishing lower with less points than last season, which we are on course to do.
And this season, there's been no injury. Well, recently. I mean, there's COVID, no fewer injury. Excuses this season than last season for me.
And of course, it's not solely down to Martin Semmons anymore. You've got the new owner. You've got Rasmus Ankersen in there, who are obviously going to have a say in things. They're not going to be as, you know, have the relationship with Ralf that Martin has got. So, I mean, it may even be as fragile as what happens in the next two games. You know, they may want, for all we know, they may want to see a response from the team in the next two games just to you know, cement what they're doing for, you know, for next season.
Well, they'll be looking at it and going, well, the top 10 finish was there for the taking, wasn't it? And it's going to cost us, what, 15 million quid maybe?
I do think there is a realisation within Sport Republic that Southampton haven't got the 8th, 9th or 10th best team in the Premier. I do think there is you know, they realise they haven't got, you know, they probably have got 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, around that kind of ball. They're in that ballpark, aren't they, of budget, of quality. So they're not, I mean, Sport Republic aren't sat there thinking, gosh, we have to finish 8th. This is outrageous. But the key thing will just be whether what they decide to do is, do you change the players and go for a big overhaul? Do you change the manager? Do you do both? That will be a key question, I think, in the kind of coming weeks.
It's always a case of, does the manager get the best out of his resources? Now, I think there has been plenty of times when Ralf has certainly done that, but it's just not happening at the moment. If you look around the league, you look at someone like Brendan Rodgers, and I know they've had Europe as a distraction at Leicester, but they've got a much more expensive squad than we've got, and they're one place above us in the league.
Yeah.
So you would say he's underperforming, whereas someone like, I don't know, until recently, Bruno Lage at Wolves is probably, you know, Graham Potter. They're kind of overachieving with what they've got. And it's just a case of how they view the strength of the playing squad and what Ralf is achieving with that. You know, and like I say, earlier on in the season, everyone was happy with it. And it was only 10, 15 games ago. I know that's a long time in football terms, but at the moment, are they going to look mainly at Ralf, or are they going to look at the squad? And as someone said earlier, do they feel he's the, if they are going to invest some money and sign three or four new players or whatever, do they feel that Ralf is the best manager to get the best manager that Saints could get to get the most out of those resources.
Sonny's watching on Facebook, says the assistants are like our number 10s. There's lots of them, but none of them are any good, which I think is a valid point. And we will talk more about Ralph and the coaching staff and the changes that need to happen in the summer over the next couple of weeks, and certainly at the live event as well. So Liverpool next, Tuesday the 17th, because that game's been changed.
Good.
Yeah, let's go for the score predictions. Go for the score predictions and call it a night.
4-0 back in November, Steve, a game against the best team in the world right now, who will need the points. So it's going to be, could be an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, all we've got to do is set ourselves up like Spurs did last night and just completely shut the game down, which obviously we've proven so adept at doing lately. Been like an impenetrable brick wall. But yeah, the way we've defended in recent months, I think you really struggle to make a case for us either getting anything out of it or even laying a glove on Liverpool at the moment. But I mean, let's be honest, it's a funny old game, and things can suddenly change completely randomly at times. And also, I mean, Liverpool obviously got the cup final 4 days earlier. If the league is effectively done by then, which it could well be, if City win at West Ham on Sunday, then, I mean, do Liverpool basically put their reserves out and not really give too much weight to our game? Who knows? If that's the situation, we're playing against their reserves, then, I mean, okay, you're up against a bunch of highly motivated players who want to play for a place in the Champions League final, but they're not the same team when three or four of their stars are not in the team. So in that situation, you then look at, okay, where are the specific weaknesses? And that'll be, you would assume, where we'll be working on for the next, 10 days or so. How are we going to lay a glove on this lot when we were... I mean, it was a weird game up at Anfield, wasn't it? Because actually we started started really well, and we still conceded inside 90 seconds. And it's one of those where you've got to, I mean, we haven't done this an awful lot much this season, especially not lately, but you've just got to take what little chance you actually get, be clinical, which I think probably means that you've got to play Adams, whether you play Brozier alongside him or whether you go with something more defensive, kind of don't really know. But I think Adams is the one, I think, of all of our strikers who I would, and I mean, it's a relatively low bar, I think, at the moment, but I think he's the one I would probably just about trust the most with any sort of snap chance that we might get against a side like Liverpool. Beyond that, I mean, I'd change, you might as well chuck Lianco in there. I mean, he can't be any worse than the two that played yesterday. And yeah, I mean, see what happens. It's kind of a free hit as long as you don't get absolutely humped. And yeah, let's see. I mean, I'm at the moment with yesterday still fairly raw. I've got absolutely no confidence or enthusiasm for that game at all. Hmm. But it's 9 days away now. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, Liverpool might get hilariously embarrassed in the cup final. And then all of a sudden we're kind of up for it a little bit more as fans, I think. But we'll see.
Glenn, do we set up the same as Arsenal at home and just defend like hell and hope to get something on the counter-attack? Do you think we'll end up with five at the back? Mark is watching on Facebook. He says we'll end up going to five at the back with Lianco coming in. Valerie as well.
Yeah, I would have said that, but directly after the game, that's what he tried to play up at Anfield. And he basically tried to match up Liverpool's, you know, three strikers with three centre-halves. And we got ripped to shreds. And he said, Ralph actually admitted after that game that he'd got it wrong. So, I mean, stranger things have happened. But so for that reason alone, I'd be surprised if he went for three at the back again. I mean, personally, I think Liverpool will find a way no matter what we do. I guess it just depends on who, you know, which players he trusts. Because against Liverpool, you've got to do your job for 90 minutes. You can't switch off. You know, you can't have 20 minutes off like we seem prone to doing, where the ball's pinballing around our penalty area all the time. We got a bit lucky in that Arsenal game, didn't we? Because, you know, Fraser had a madness. But this is a different level altogether. if Liverpool were on it and they, you know, they need to win and they've got more or less their first team out, it's an entirely different level. Because the one thing I've noticed this year, you know, you talk about the big six, but Liverpool and Manchester City are so far ahead of the others. It's just ridiculous. I think there will be a few reserve players playing for Liverpool because, you know, they've got Chelsea, which is not a game that they can, in the cup finals, it's not a game that they can rest people and take any liberties. If they were playing a team from the bottom half, they might rest a couple in the cup final, but as ridiculous as that sounds. But I see them coming with a pretty strong team. So I'm expecting to see, you know, Salah and Mane and one other playing the midfield. Van Dijk will play, absolutely positive of that. And to be honest, I see nothing to suggest that we'll trouble them at all. As Steve said, will we lay a glove on them? I mean, I've sat through some horrible games against Liverpool where the game's been dead after 20 minutes and you just 70 minutes of their fans singing Mo Salah flying down the wing. It's not fun. It's not fun. So, yeah, not really looking forward to it much. But I don't know. I think I'd be tempted to pack the midfield, maybe a sort of 4-5-1 type thing with Shea Adams up front and just try and support him. But I think whatever you decide to do, it's a very big stretch to expect us to get anything out of it.
Have we got any chance, Dan? Can we finish on a positive? I'm thinking we always play better against the bigger teams. I was going to say we've got 10 days to rest, but I think we talked about this before, haven't we? That's when Ralph's thinking tends to go into overdrive.
And players can actually go to the beach now. So maybe they go to the beach instead of mistaking a football pitch for a beach. Have Southampton got a chance? Well, they're going to start with the same number of men on the pitch. The score will be 0-0. The game will kick off and their chance will go. I don't think we can sit here and say that Southampton have got a chance of winning that. An awful lot would have to go wrong for Southampton to get 3 points out of this game. So as with Glenn and Steve, I'm equally optimistic that Southampton will probably lose.
Let's do predictions for the penultimate time.
That Strictly Come Dancing. It'll be like 7.
Have you got your paddles? Now, Glenn, last week, I think you said 2-0 defeat. We all predicted, I think, a defeat. You were the closest last week, so I'll let you go first.
All right, okay.
You can still draw level with Dan as well, though, because you're only a few points behind. So there is.
Right.
I'm trying to build this up and create a bit of excitement, but it is all still to play for.
So it's how many goals will Liverpool get? That's the question.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go for Southampton 0 because I think that's
pushing the boat out there.
Yeah. bit of a wild guess that one. So I think Southampton 0. I'll go Liverpool 3 because I think they'll get to the. They've got bigger games to come. You know, the league may well be beyond them. They've got Champions League to come, so it wouldn't surprise me if they get to the point where they're, you know, the game is done and then they phone it in, you know, for the last half an hour sort of thing. And we see the likes of James Milner and people like that. So, yeah, I'll go 3-0 Liverpool.
All right. Steve, how many are Liverpool going to get?
5.
Okay. And Dan?
4.
4. Right. Okay. I think we've got all the options covered. I can see a 9 and a 5 in the predictions as well. So with that game being moved, our next podcast will be on the Wednesday night. We're going to get back together on Wednesday the 18th to discuss that one. So look forward to that. And before we say goodbye, big shout out to our patrons as always. In our Matlatiz tier, we've got Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy, Phil Cook, and Nick Higston. In the Francis Benali tier, there's Nick Reed, Matt Hall, and David Melton. And you can find out more about becoming a TSP patron and all the benefits that come with that over on the website. Thanks to Steve, thanks to Glenn, thanks to Dan. Enjoy it'll be a weekend off, and we'll catch up a week on Wednesday. Don't forget to follow this podcast wherever you're watching or listening tonight. And on the socials, it's at Total Saints Pod. We've also got that TSP live show coming up to mark our 200th episode, which is going to be on Friday, the 27th of May at the Five Rivers Sports Bar in support of the Saints Foundation. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching, and have a great week.